outside. And all them crazy murderers will never run from inside. You try to keep me down cause you see no joy. All them knows them from, so you call a man a boy. I ain't a tie, can't just see. Open up your eyes.
The thing that makes Judaism dangerous to everybody, to every race, to every nation, to every idea, is that we smash things that aren't true. We don't believe in the boundaries of nation state. We don't believe in the ideas of these individual gods that protect individual groups of people. These are all artificial constructions, and Judaism really teaches us how to see that. In a sense, our detractors have us right in that we are a corrosive force. We're breaking down the false gods of all nations and all people because they're not real.
And here we go, folks. It is Wednesday, March the 4th, 2026, the year of our Lord Jesus Christ, King of the Gentiles, the Man of Steel, and you are listening to today's edition of the Ugly Truth broadcast. Welcome to the program, folks. Hope you're all doing well. All ye Gentiles of goodwill, as we say often on the program, we don't wish our enemies well, folks, not when our enemies have dedicated themselves for thousands of years to our utter destruction. And obviously, folks, given the events that are taking place right now as we speak, these people are deadly serious about our destruction, and make no mistake about it, what is going on in Iran right now, folks, has as its intended end result the destruction of the West, and especially those portions of the West that are the living embodiment of the teachings of Jesus Christ. Anyway, folks, we did do a few programs since we were last together, but I don't know, I just had this sneaky suspicion that something big was coming, and I wanted to hold off broadcasting the programs so that I didn't wind up saying something that maybe was off the bullseye or something like that. And no sooner had I made that decision when literally the world turned upside down, and I was glad that I had not went ahead and published the program. Not that we were missing any accurate predictions, folks. What we said on the program is what we've been saying, which is that it's entirely possible that Donald J. Trump, President of the United States, will find himself forced into an apocalyptic corner where he will have no choice other than to give the Jews the war that they are demanding. We should have seen it coming, folks, knowing that Purim was just right around the bend. And, of course, Purim is that yearly celebration where Jews all over the world dress up in various kinds of costumes. They get themselves falling down drunk, and they eat pastries made out to resemble the body parts of their Persian enemies, who they believe their ancestors mass murdered to the tune of 75,000 people about 2,500 years ago. Now, I just have one quick thing to say about this, folks. Part of the reason that we're in the mess that we're in, and make no mistake about the fact that it is a big and dangerous mess, is because we haven't been told the truth, folks. Okay, and not just since 9/11, or not just since October 7th, or not just since whenever, okay, but going back thousands of years, okay, the people that we trusted to do our thinking for us and who were supposed to explain things to us as accurately as possible, they were able, folks, absent without leave. They were derelict in their duty, and they didn't put the pieces of the puzzle together in the way that it should have been. Now, we use this imagery all the time on this program, the puzzle and putting the pieces together in the right way, because it really does work, folks. It's the best comparison in explaining what we're dealing with here, all right? If the pieces of the puzzle aren't put together in the way that they're supposed to, then the picture doesn't make any sense. Okay, it comes out looking like a Picasso painting, and I'm confident that everybody here knows what that means. If you've ever seen any Picasso paintings, you know how unproportional they are, disproportional, how they are out of whack. You know, you've got an eyeball way over here and an ear in the middle of the face and, you know, an arm growing out of the top of the head. Okay, so, you know, all the body parts are there, but they're in their wrong places. Okay, not being critical of Pablo Picasso, I'm just saying that when there are apocalyptic events approaching and people need to know what's going on and they turn to certain institutions or individuals to explain this to them, and these individuals and institutions don't do a good job and they give them a bad representation of what everyone is facing, that's how we get into situations where we are now. Now, how this relates to the discussion of Purim. Well, folks, as those of you who have followed this program and what we do on the website know, it's really one of my pet peeves, to borrow a term that we use here in the West. Pet peeve, whenever I run into someone or a group of someone's who are constantly railing against the Jewish Talmud, but they leave the Old Testament intact. In fact, not only do they leave it intact, they honor it and they bless it and they say that it's just as holy and just as valid as the teachings of Jesus Christ found in the New Testament. And they say that it's a completely different work in terms of religious literature, that the Jews abandoned their Torah, their Old Testament, their Tanakh, whatever term we want to use in describing it, and they adopted the Talmud, and this is what makes them the horrible humanoids that they are today, is because of this horrible book known as the Talmud. And it is a horrible book, folks. Anything that would depict Jesus Christ and his blessed mother in the fashion that the Talmud does. I'm not going to go into, you know, the nitty-gritty, the ugly truth about what it says. You can look it up for yourself. Any book that would say something like the Talmud does about Jesus Christ and his mother obviously is a horrible book. But this notion that the Talmud is the piston driving the engine of all of this Judaic madness that has now taken over the world simply isn't true. And the proof of it, folks, is that the Jews are celebrating Purim, or they just finished celebrating Purim. It's an extended Purim, folks, because this is what the attack on Iran is all about. So these people, and here's where I'm going to break with previously established protocol, and I'm going to name names, okay? Please don't interpret this as my being unnecessarily or uncharitably critical of these individuals, one of whom, in my opinion, has been absolutely brilliant in his study of the Talmud and what a horrible book it is. But nevertheless, folks, he has led people astray by saying that the Talmud and the Torah have nothing to do with each other. They're two completely different and opposite works of religious literature, and that the reason that the Jews are the horrible humanoids that they are today is all because of the Talmud and because they have abandoned the holy teachings of their Torah, meaning the Old Testament. This simply isn't true, folks, and the proof of it is the fact that Jews all around the world were celebrating Purim beginning on Monday and into Tuesday. Okay, Purim it's not a Talmud thing, folks. It's an Old Testament thing. Okay, the book of Esther is in the Old Testament. Okay? And the fact that this is not just some, and by the way, folks, the naming of the names, in this case I'm talking about individuals such as Michael Hoffman and others who will just ferociously fight to defend the Old Testament, the Torah, and say, no, this is a holy book, and all of the individuals in it, at least as they're depicted, you know, who sold their wives and their daughters as sex slaves, and then later, you know, fathers who slept with their daughters, and, you know, men who ordered the execution of Amalek and all of the people, the indigenous people of the Middle East, that they were all holy men rather than war criminals, murderers, pimps, human traffickers, child molesters, and all of the rest of it, as they are described in that book, folks. Okay, this isn't me talking. You know, look at it with your own eyes and with an open mind, and you'll see for yourself. So, anyway, we have not been given the truth by those that we trusted to do the interpreting for us, and this is why, right now, folks, we are literally on the knife's edge between life as we know it now versus possible World War III that could literally erupt any moment. I just saw a headline where Russian President Vladimir Putin's deputy national security advisor, former President Dmitry Medvedev, said that if this thing in Iran gets out of control, if it goes on much longer, then Russia's response to this is going to make what happened to Hiroshima look like child's play. Okay. So, nevertheless, folks, despite, you know, what are obviously dark events unfolding right now in front of us, there's a lot to celebrate as well. And we're going to be talking about that. I know what you're saying. What in the heck is there to celebrate right now as all of these innocent people are dying? As the Jews have gotten one more of their religiously commanded bloodbaths started. Well, we'll get into that in a few moments, folks. We will not be joined by Stas today, folks. He had to take on an extra job in order to make ends meet, and so he's running this crazy schedule right now that leaves him with very little time, unfortunately, to do this thing here. He does send his regards. He says that he will be back as soon as possible. But he also sees the writing on the wall, and he understands that maybe he needs to make a little bit of extra money right now so that he can put away some food and other supplies in the event, likely or unlikely, that, again, life as we know it may come to a screeching halt as a result of what's going on in Iran and the Middle East. Now, folks, if you tuned in today to hear those of us here at this humble little informational endeavor cry uncle and say, you know, Trump is a slave to the Jews. No such discussion will be taking place, folks. Everything that we have said now for the last 10 years remains the same, which is that the president is out to prevent World War III, not to start World War III. But sometimes, folks, his hand is forced, and this is one of them. You'll recall a few months ago, we did a program where we talked about the very revealing and disturbing revelations from the former CIA officer, John Kiriakou, where he said that according to his sources, that the reason that the president finally decided to go ahead and attack Iran was because Israel had threatened to use nuclear weapons. Now, folks, not wanting to pat myself on the back too loudly, nevertheless, this is exactly what yours truly theorized in the immediate aftermath of the attack on the nuclear facilities, which was that Israel must have threatened to use nuclear weapons. And, you know, I didn't just pull this out of thin air, folks. I did have some circumstantial evidence to back this up, coming right out of the mouth of the President of the United States himself. The first piece of circumstantial evidence was that he put on his Truth Social account, he was pushing the people of Tehran to evacuate the city. Now, having been to Tehran many times, folks, I can tell you it is it's breathtaking in its size. It's huge. It's unbelievable how big it is. At any given moment, there are between 10 and 15 million people there. And so for the President of the United States to tell the people of Tehran to evacuate the city, that really can only mean one thing, folks, which is that there are nukes on the way. Shortly after he wrote this on his Truth Social account, he then was quoted in a news article saying, "I told Netanyahu to recall the planes and to bring them back. They were on their way, and I stopped what was going to be a massive assault on Tehran." Okay, and at the time we said, okay, he ordered the planes returned. What was on those planes? What was on those planes? You know, if the President of the United States issues this warning, this public service announcement to the people of Tehran and tells them to evacuate, and then he says that he prevented a massive assault on Tehran by Israel, that really can only mean one thing, folks, which is that the Jews were getting ready to atomically incinerate 15 million Iranians, okay, and that this is what forced his hand to go ahead and to bomb the nuclear facilities, not because he wanted to start World War III, not because he was a slave to Netanyahu, but rather when he weighed the cost and the benefit of either bombing the facilities and saving 15 million people or not bombing the facilities and seeing 15 million people evaporate, it was an easy choice. And essentially, folks, this is what we're dealing with now. As I said a few months ago, now that the president has shown Netanyahu and the rest of these terrorist Jews that he can be pushed into the war corner with the threat of using nuclear weapons, all bets are off. Okay, now they really do have him by the throat. All they have to do is use the N-word, folks, meaning nuclear, and the president is going to do whatever has to be done in order to prevent that from happening. And that's what's happening now, folks. In the subsequent programs that appeared here after that, and especially in the last month or so, when we addressed the fact that the president had sent all of these forces to the Middle East, we theorized that the reason for this was not necessarily to attack Iran, but rather to put a rope around the neck of this wild, rabid dog in the region and prevent Israel from starting World War III. We went further in our theory by saying that more than likely what was in the works was that the president received intelligence indicating that these elements within Iran who were working for Israel, that they had their hands on ballistic missiles, cruise missiles, all sorts of weaponry that could be fired from Iran into U.S. bases nearby, Iraq, Qatar, other places, and that this would be used to force the president's hand in launching a war. We even went a step further, folks, by saying it could very well be that what was in the works was the plans to attack an aircraft carrier and to sink it, killing 5,000 people, at which point the president would have no choice. He would have to engage in military action. If he dragged his feet doing it, folks, then they would have brought articles of impeachment up against him and convicted him within hours. Okay. None of these scenarios, folks, is by any means, out in left field. But what it does show is that we are dangerously, dangerously close to the edge on this, and that it appears as though the president is running out of options. Okay. And again, folks, not to beat a dead horse, but nevertheless, this is why for the last 10 years we have remained constant in our trying to tell anybody who would listen why it's so important that they not add any additional pressure to the president. Don't do the Jews' dirty work for them by screeching and hollering. You know, everybody's focused on the pilot who's trying to get the plane safely to the ground instead of on the terrorists who are trying to crash the plane. So that's where things stand right now, folks. It is, I know that there are doubtless people who are saying there's nothing to worry about. You know, this is all part of the plan. And I have no doubt, folks, that the president, he is scrambling to come up with something in order to prevent this thing from really turning into nuclear World War III. I don't think that he is as confident about this as he was, say, back in June of 2025 when he launched the attacks on the nuclear facilities. I think he's genuinely worried right now, folks, genuinely worried. There were some interesting stories associated with this that I want to touch on very quickly that I think will give some better background as to the picture that we're trying to paint here. One of which is the fact that the Secretary of State, Marco Rubio, after leaving a classified briefing, he stated that the reason that the United States decided to launch the attack against Iran is because Israel, basically what he was saying, if you read between the lines, is that Israel forced us to do it. They said they were going to go in by themselves and do it if we didn't do it first. Now, folks, there is an entire universe of possibilities associated with that statement. Okay. Again, what were they going to use? Okay. What kind of weaponry were they going to use? Was it going to be conventional weapons or was it going to be nuclear weapons? Nuclear weapons. And not just nuclear weapons loaded up on planes, folks, but maybe nuclear weapons that are already there to the point where the president has no options at his disposal to shoot down the planes or do anything of the sort. This is the point that we've been trying to make here, folks. We're dealing with something that is so otherworldly in its diabolical intelligence that even the most powerful man in the world, the President of the United States, finds himself tied up and unable to do anything about it, or at least that he has limited options. So Rubio says, basically, Israel forced our hand on this. And then this was backed up by Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson. He said the same exact thing. Israel's plans helped push the U.S. into the war with Iran. So, folks, where does that leave things? Well, it's obvious that the president is trying to wrap this thing up as quickly as possible so that it does not escalate. Because now is the time, if the Jews are going to do it, for them, well, they have already started. They have mounted an invasion of Lebanon. now is the time for them to just set the entire region on fire. Lebanon, Syria, Jordan, Egypt, everything. And then, of course, the Gulf states, Qatar and the others. Okay, folks, so we actually have a listening audience with us today, folks, some listeners from the good old days. And so I had to take a brief moment and let them come into the program, but they will remain patiently silent while we continue our discussion. Interestingly enough, one of them just gave a very interesting perspective on all of this, which is the president is working closely with the Russians and the Chinese in order to try and contain this war for redemption. Now, remember, folks, Netanyahu changed the title of Operation Swords of Iron to the War of Redemption. Now, it just sounds like a reorganizing of terminology, but it carries within it, folks, literally the building blocks of Armageddon, that term, redemption, okay? What redemption means, folks, now to Christians, redemption, we hear it all the time in church. We hear how Jesus redeemed us through his blood, and we've been redeemed, we've been rescued from hell, and all of the rest of that. That's not what it means to the Jews, folks. Redemption means taking control of all of that land that they believe was given to them, and which you can read about if you'll just crack open your books, the book of Genesis, all of them, and see exactly what it says from the Nile to the Euphrates. Okay, so when Netanyahu renamed the war in Gaza, the war in for the entire Middle East, to the War of Redemption, this should have scared everybody down to their core, folks. If the Gentile world were paying attention to the things that it should be, you know, paying attention to, they would have said, uh-oh, that's a bad sign. Redemption carries with it a very particular meaning within the Jewish apocalyptic lexicon. And what it means is this is the big one. This is the big war that the Jews have been planning on and preparing for the last 3,000 plus years. A huge war, folks, that they say will destroy 3/4 of the existing Gentiles, okay? And that those Gentiles that are left alive will be reduced to a life of abject slavery, okay? To the best of my knowledge, folks, there was only one alternative media outlet that homed in on that term, War of Redemption, and assigned to it the importance that it deserves. And I hate to say that, folks. I'm not saying that with any degree of arrogance or anything like that. It's to underscore what we started off saying at the beginning of this program, which is how late to this topic we are, how we have not been told the things that we should have been told a long time ago. We trusted people that we thought were smarter than us to figure it out for us. And now we find ourselves having been tossed into this pit full of alligators and we can't get out of it because everything that we were told up to this point was, I won't say it's exactly wrong, but it's off the mark to the point where now we don't know what to do, okay? This alligator that we brought into our home 2,000 years ago, this tiny little baby alligator, you know, when our common sense should have told us, hey, this thing, it isn't going to stay tiny forever. It's going to get bigger. It's going to grow. And then what? Okay. Well, now the alligator is in charge of the house. It's eating everybody in it, and we can't get it out. Not even the President of the United States. Now, folks, I started off saying that we do have good news to discuss today. Yes, it appears as though World War III now has just entered a new phase. Notice that I said a new phase, folks. I didn't say it got started. World War III got started thousands of years ago when the Jews got together and decided that they were going to offer everything up as a burnt offering to the violent demonic deity that they worship, Yahweh. Okay, not the God of Jesus Christ, not the God of Muhammad, folks. You know, we hear that all the time, you know. People who are trying to pour gasoline on this fire between the Christian and the Islamic worlds, they say, well, the God of Islam is not the same as the God of Christianity, of Judeo-Christianity. That's partly right, folks, okay? And this is the problem, is that the Christians worship the Jewish God without realizing it. They don't realize that they're worshiping a God that was at complete variance with God the Father mentioned by Jesus Christ. So we do have some good news, folks. And on that note, I'm going to play. Well, I'll just tell you what the good news is. Okay. Those of you out there who follow the program know that I have a very jaded view of the alternative media and just how, as I've said before, how derelict most of them are in the analysis that they give. They take a confusing picture, and in many ways they make it more confusing and unbalanced than it already is. Okay? But there's one individual, folks, actually two of them now that I think of it, whose praises I cannot sing strongly enough. And the first of them, obviously, is Tucker Carlson. The conversation is beginning, folks. Yes, it's beginning very late, but it is beginning. And the most recent interview that he did with that knucklehead, Mike Huckabee, the American ambassador to Israel, was an important part of this. You know, it's been a mainstay here on this humble little informational endeavor, as we refer to it, for the last 20 years, folks, to talk about, you know, the real problem with this whole experiment in the Middle East is that the Jews don't plan to just relegate themselves to this tiny sliver of land, that they want the whole thing from the Nile to the Euphrates. And why, folks? Because it's there in the Bible. It's in the Old Testament. It's in the Torah. It's been sitting there as an open secret for thousands of years. Thousands of years, just waiting for intelligent people to open this up and to say, let's see, the Jews were run out in 70 AD. They weren't allowed back. I wonder what would happen if they did come back. Would they try to pick up where they left off and do all of this Nile to the Euphrates business? Would they start mass murdering everybody in the region as they're commanded by the book of Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Deuteronomy, and all the rest of them to do? Would they start doing that? I wrote something kind of radical, folks, in an op-ed, or not op-ed, but an EdNote commentary on a piece that appeared today on the website, where I pointed out that one of the philosophical flaws that has brought us to this point, at least as far as the Christian West is concerned, is that we have been taught for 2,000 years that the reason that the Jews lost their land is because it was a punishment for their being rebellious. And that's not exactly true, folks. It wasn't that it was the act of an angry God who was punishing them. It was the act of a loving God who understood that there is something dark and diabolical about those people when they get into that land. That it's like plugging a light into an outlet, and it turns the light on, or some other horrible piece of machinery. You know, it won't work until you give it this energy source, and then once it turns on, it's, well, actually the best way to compare it, folks, is like highly radioactive nuclear material. You bring it all together, and now you've got this thing known as an atomic bomb. And so them being run out of the land as they were 2,000 years ago, this wasn't necessarily, or it wasn't as much the act of an angry God as it was the act of a loving and merciful God. Because this power of creation knew that when these creatures get into that land, they are empowered and energized to do the worst things in the world, which is to destroy everything. Has there ever been in the history of mankind a more violent and destructive century than the one that has passed ever since the Jews began returning to that land? And this is why, folks, this is why Jesus was very clear when he was predicting the fall of Jerusalem, and he said, not one stone left upon the other. Okay? And this wasn't just, you know, a punishment, folks. This was the act of a merciful higher power, whatever you want to call it, the creator, God, Allah, whatever you want to call it, in order to save the planet and to save all creation. Now, on that note, folks, we've got some sound bites here that we're going to play that I lifted off of the interview that Tucker Carlson did with the American ambassador to Israel, I'm sorry. And we're going to talk about that for a couple of minutes here. So let's just sit back and give it a listen.
Here's the point. We're talking about Christian Zionism. The idea that as a Christian, I believe in both the Old and the New Testament. Why wouldn't I? I'm a person of the book. There are 80 million evangelical Christians in the United States. What makes us who we are is our adherence to the Scripture, our belief that the Bible, all of it, not part of it, but all of it, is the Word of the living God.
Yeah.
So if I believe in the Old and the New Testament, I do believe that there is a very specific call to the Jewish people that started with Abraham. And he called them out of what is now modern-day Iraq, said, come where I send you. He came. This is the land. Genesis 12:3. He says, I will bless those who bless you, curse those who curse you. In Genesis 17, he looks out at the world. He says, look, and this is where I'm giving you the land. And I think there's still a basis for the Jews having this little bitty strip of real estate.
I'm not even arguing with you. I'm just trying to understand what it is that you're saying. What you will hear me say is I'm confused by what the definitions are. So let's go through this. You've appealed to Genesis. Genesis 15 says it's Abram. It's pre-Abraham. It's Abram. Receives from God the news that his descendants will inherit the land. And you tell me as the theologian if I'm getting this wrong, but from the Euphrates to the Nile. I think that's right. And that would include like basically the entire Middle East. That would be the Levant. So that would be Israel, Jordan, Syria, Lebanon. It would also be big parts of Saudi Arabia and Iraq. It would be, I mean,
not sure it would go that far. I mean, it would be a big piece of land. But here's the point.
It would be a lot of places that are now countries.
But this particular area that we're talking about now, Israel, is a land that God gave through Abraham to a people that he chose. It was a people, a place, and a purpose. We can look at it that way. Christian Zionism, I want to go back because that's where we started.
I'm not going to let you off on this because you have said it three times that God gave this land to this people. And so it is entirely fair for me with respect to ask, what land are you talking about? Because I just read Genesis 15, as I have many times. Mm-hmm. And that land, I think it says, from the Nile to the Euphrates, which is, once again, basically the entire Middle East. So God gave that land to his people, the Jews, or he didn't. You're saying he did. What does that mean? Does Israel have the right to that land? Because you're appealing to Genesis.
Yeah.
You're saying that's the original deed.
It would be fine if they took it all. But I don't think that's what we're talking about here today.
What would be fine? Well, it's exactly what we're talking about today.
But here's what I don't think
you think it would be fine if the state of Israel took over all of Jordan.
They don't want to take it over. That they're not asking to take it over.
But you're saying that the reason that Israel is legitimate, has this inherent right to exist, is in part because mm-hmm. God gave it to his people. And I am going to the same Bible that you're referring to and noticing that that is a huge piece of land. So if God gave them that land, then they have a right to take it now by your definition, unless I'm missing something completely.
Well, I think you're missing something because they're not asking to go back to take all of that, but they are asking to at least take the land that they now occupy, they now live in, they now own legitimately, and it is a safe haven for them.
Well, but may I ask, though, because you're appealing, you're explaining what Christian Zionism mm-hmm. is and your theological beliefs, and I think you just said it would be fine with you if the state of Israel took all of Jordan, all of Syria, all of Lebanon.
That's really not exactly what I'm trying to say.
I'm asking,
Tucker.
Is that what you said? I thought that's what you just said.
It was somewhat of a hyperbolic statement in that, you know, if that's what you feel like that we're talking about, but it isn't. We're talking about this land that Israel, the state of Israel, now lives in and wants to have peace in. They're not trying to take over Jordan. They're not trying to take over Syria. They're not trying to take over Iraq or anywhere else. But they do want to protect
Lebanon?
Their people. No, they're not trying to take over Lebanon.
But you're saying that as a religious man, as a Christian Zionist, you agree with a lot of religious communities here in Israel that the justification for this country is theological. It's a contract between God and his people. And I'm telling you that that contract includes a tract of land that is much larger than the current nation state.
So you may be a bigger Zionist than even the Jews are that live in Israel.
I'm trying to understand the implications of your theology for geopolitics.
Yeah.
Because you're saying that the present government of Israel has a moral right to take over what are now other people's countries.
No, I didn't say that.
Then what are you saying?
I'm simply saying that the people who live in Israel, I think, have a right to have security, have safety. They have a right to be able to live in this land that they have a connection to for 3,800
I told myself when I said a prayer that
years.
I would not get annoyed, but as someone who is, you know, the father of daughters, when I see child molesters hiding in Israel and escaping American justice, I think I have a right to safety in my country too. So you can understand that I think most people feel they have a right to safety, but I'm an American. And I have a right to safety in my country, too.
Of course you do.
Agree? And yeah. I think so. But I just want to get to this point. If Israel were to say God gave us in Genesis 15 all of Lebanon, all of Syria, all the way up to Iraq, would that be legitimate in your view?
I don't think in this particular day and time they're asking for it.
Would it be legitimate?
I'm not sure that it would be.
Why? Because you just said that God gave it to them.
Well, because I think that there is an understanding that the people of Israel today, now if they end up getting attacked by all these places and they win that war and they take that land, then okay, that's a whole nother discussion. But you and I started talking about something simple, Christian Zionism.
But it turns out it's
and
not
now
simple
you,
because I don't. The yeah. core of Christian Zionism, you said, and I'm quoting you, is the understanding, the belief, the theological understanding yeah. that Jews have a moral and legal, we went through the legal,
and biblical.
Moral deriving from the biblical,
yeah.
from the promises in our Bible, which we share with the Jewish people, the first part mm-hmm. of the Old Testament, that it derives from God's promise to the Jews. And so I have two questions. What are the borders of that? And who are those people in 2026? And you're not the first person I've asked, but you're the most reasonable, most gentle, most theologically informed person. So I'm really hoping for an answer.
Yeah.
The first question was the borders. I can't get an answer.
Yeah.
Those borders are. So I'm going to give up. But the second question is every bit as pressing, which is who are the people?
Who are the modern?
Yes. Who are the descendants? So we know, and I believe, and I agree yeah. with you as a Christian, that God promised this land from modern-day Iraq to modern-day Egypt to this people, Abram's descendants, as it says in Genesis 15. Who are his descendants now, and how do we know who they are?
Okay, folks, so that was part of the interview that Tucker Carlson did with Mike Huckabee. You know, folks, after the interview with Huckabee, the internet was afire with all sorts of people saying Huckabee should, he's this, he's that, he's an idiot, he should be recalled, he's this. Folks, I'm going to tell you a little bit of ugly truth here. Okay, substantively, okay, people like Mike Huckabee differ from the average Christian only by degrees. Because if you ask the average Christian, do you believe in the Old Testament? Do you believe that the Jews or the Hebrews or the Israelites or the Khazars or the Edomites or whatever we want to call them, okay, do you believe that they were promised this land from the Nile to the Euphrates by this God? They will say yes, they were promised that land. Now, the more reasonable types will say, well, yeah, but they lost all of that because they became rebellious. But nevertheless, folks, as soon as you take in the one, like Jesus said, you can't serve two masters. You're either going to love the one and hate the other, or vice versa. And Jesus also said, beware of the leaven of the Pharisees, the lies of the Pharisees. The you know, the seduction of the Pharisees, and that's part of that warning, folks. Okay, this is why we find ourselves. If there were no such thing as Judeo-Christianity, meaning the marriage of the teachings of Moses, at least as they appear in that Old Testament, with the teachings of Jesus, completely contradictory philosophies and ideas, folks, okay? If there were no marriage between those two, we wouldn't be having this discussion. If Christianity had remained the way that it was supposed to, which is about the person and the teachings of Jesus Christ, we wouldn't be having this conversation. We wouldn't be mixing Moses with Jesus, okay? Now, on that note, folks, I'm just going to give you a little piece of proof in that regard, you know, where Jesus, where he warned, you know, you can't serve two masters. You're going to love the one and hate the other, or you're going to hate the one and love the other, okay? Now, as far as Jesus' position on all of this, this Jewish state thing, he made it very clear, folks, not only with what we discussed before about the destruction of Jerusalem, not one stone being left upon the other, and Jesus never talked about it ever being rebuilt. Okay, he talked about total destruction and it never being rebuilt. Okay, all of these things that people like Mike Huckabee and others throw out there, the prophecy of the Jews returning to this, the prophecy of the Jews returning to that, the only prophecy, folks, and I'm not big into prophecy, okay, especially anything coming out of the Old Testament, but the only prophecy that I would say relates to the return of the Jews to this land from which they were driven is all of the dark stuff that you read about in the last book of the Bible, the Apocalypse, where it talks about this monster that comes out from the sea and it takes over the entire world. It forces the entire world to worship it and forces everybody to bow down and to view this monster as God. And anybody who refuses is put to the sword, okay? That's the only prophecy about the Jews returning to Israel, folks, is the 13th chapter of the book of the Apocalypse. Now, as far as what Jesus specifically had to say about this, folks, you'll read about it in the parable that you find, I think it's in the book of Matthew, chapter 21, where he talks about the landowner and how he rents the land out to some tenants so that they can grow crops. And then the deal is that they will give him a cut of the crops at harvest time. So harvest time rolls around, and he sends one of his servants to the tenants to collect his share of the fruits and vegetables, and they kill the servant. And then the landowner sends another servant out there. to collect his share, and they kill that servant. He says, all right, I'll send my son. Okay, then they'll know that I'm serious. And so, again, they took his son and they killed him. And so the story ends with Jesus saying, what will happen to these tenants? He says they'll be thrown off the land, and a people who are more worthy will be given that land, and who will work the soil and produce good fruit. Now, that's it, folks. You don't have to be, you don't have to have an advanced degree in theology to see that Jesus is talking about the fact that the stinking Jews would be kicked out of that land, spit out, vomited out, sneezed out, coughed out, and that it would be given to people who are more worthy. So why is it that people like Mike Huckabee and others, this huge problem that we have, folks, known as Christian Zionists, why is it that they can't see this? Why can't they not see that Jesus is very clear that the Jews are going to get kicked out and that the land will be given to people who are more worthy? Why, folks? Because they're pouring new wine into old wineskins, borrowing another comparison that Jesus made. He said if you pour the new wine, meaning the wine of Jesus and his teachings, into the old wineskins of Judaism, what did Jesus say happens? The wineskins burst, and all of that good new wine gets spilled out so that it can't be used. And that's what's happened, because they have tried to mix the teachings of Moses with the teachings of Jesus, and you simply can't do that, folks. Okay, next sound bite we're going to talk about here, just a second, folks. And it is right here.
The leadership is a different question, and I want to refer you very specifically to a number of speeches the Prime Minister, your friend Benjamin Netanyahu, gave in the aftermath of October 7th, including one in November of that year, when he referred to Amalek. Now, Amalek is a reference, a biblical reference, so of course you'll be very familiar with that. The Amalekites were a tribe described throughout the Bible, particularly in 1 Samuel, that obstructed the Jews as they fled Egypt. And God tells Samuel to give the instructions to Saul to kill the Amalekites. And he says, and I'm sure you remember this, this is in 1 Samuel 15, of course, I'm sure, I know you know it. He says, kill the men, kill the women, kill the children, kill the infants, kill the donkeys, kill the camels, kill everything. And Saul spares the king, and he spares the animals. And for that, he is punished by God. That is genocide. God is calling for genocide of the Amalekites, of Amalek. And the Prime Minister of Israel, at least once, I believe on other occasions, described the Palestinians in Gaza as Amalek. That's calling for genocide. And you know that.
I totally disagree.
Tell me then what it means.
Because to say that Israel was attempting to commit genocide, first of all, that's simply not true.
I'm saying, what is the Prime Minister talking about? Why would he refer to the Palestinians as Amalek? What is Amalek?
You would have to ask him. I don't know. I know what Amalek is. I do understand 1 Samuel 16. I get all
15.
That.
1 Samuel 15.
15. But
and
I do understand.
It's very and it's widely known. So if you say our enemy is Amalek and we are proceeding on the basis of God's commands to us, you are calling for genocide. Tell me how I'm missing.
Okay, folks, so once again, was Tucker Carlson trying to get a rational answer out of the U.S. ambassador to Israel, an ordained, quote-unquote, Christian minister, Mike Huckabee, about this issue of Amalek. And you can hear it in Huckabee's voice, folks. You can see it if you watch the interview, how uncomfortable he is. You know, the whole Nile to the Euphrates thing, where he's just, you know, talking around the issue. He won't answer the question. You know, if it's okay, I mean, this is basically what Tucker Carlson was asking him. If it's okay for the Jews to do to the Palestinians and others
in the region, what they've been doing for the last century, in getting this little, I can't remember exactly how Huckabee said it, but this tiny little strip of land. They always do that whenever they want to minimize, you know, what it is that has taken place. And, you know, Carlson obviously has Huckabee cornered. He says, well, if it's okay for the Jews to do this in getting Palestine, then why is it not okay for the Jews to do it in grabbing Lebanon and Syria and Jordan and Egypt and Saudi Arabia and Turkey and Iraq and all the us? And here's the amazing thing is, folks, the amazing thing, Huckabee knows the answer to these questions. He knows exactly what the Old Testament says better than Tucker Carlson does. But he also knows that to say this is going to pull the mask off of the entire operation, the entire redemption, like we've talked about before. And in effect, folks, like I said before, you know, the only prophetic book in the Bible that talks about the Jews returning to Israel is that last one, known as the Book of the Apocalypse or the Revelation, where it talks about this beast, this monster rising up from out of the seas, and it's on this rampage where it's just mass murdering everyone. And it talks about those who are the worshipers of this beast, folks, those who have sold their souls to the devil and who are going to be, and at the end of all of this, they are going to be tossed into the lake of fire with this beast. Now, in the midst of all this dark discussion, folks, I said that this was actually really good news. And it is, folks. I personally can't tell you how much it was music to my ears to hear Tucker Carlson saying these things. The conversation that we've been trying to get started for 20 years finally is being picked up by somebody, not just a person with considerable influence, but somebody who's very close with the President of the United States, which brings me to my next point. We should not have any doubt, folks. We should not have any doubt about the fact that all of this is taking place with the foreknowledge, the cooperation, and the guidance of the president. Okay, Tucker Carlson is, in effect, acting as, I won't say the president's spokesman, but he's saying those things to the American people that the president simply can't say. He can't have a theological conversation with his biggest base of support, these Christian evangelicals, and to try and point out to them, to say, do you realize how nuts all of you are? Do you realize, you know, how much on the wrong side of all of this you are? Now, we have some more sound bites, folks, but one of the things that I want to point out, Carlson has made 3 trips to the White House in less than a month. The last one he made was just a week ago. Two weeks ago, right after he did the interview with Huckabee. And in a subsequent podcast, Tucker Carlson had something very interesting to say relative to all of this business involving Iran. Now, this is before the war started, but we can rest assured, folks, that what he said on his program was something that he had worked out with the president ahead of time. So we're going to give it a listen right now.
When this first started again, like the build up to what we did in July with BB, like they're this close to having the nuclear bomb, like blah, blah. It was one of the aha moments that I've had over the past year when it came to Israel, because I was there. I was at Fox News for each of those UN addresses by BB. And the one that I remember in particular where he had the picture of the bomb and it looked like the round bomb that like they do in the cartoons, and said that they're within months. And I was a naive young journalist at Fox who really didn't do a lot of foreign policy coverage. Like, oh, wow, that sounds dire. God, that's bad. We better pay attention if that's true. I think Iran hates us. That's what they say. And they hate Israel. So, wow. And here we were 14 years removed from that speech with him saying the same thing. And truly, it's just like over time, if you paid any attention, you realize he's been lying every time. He has an agenda. They weren't. He's said it for years. If they were within months of getting the bomb back then, that was, I think, 2012. Why are we now at 2026 and they don't have it? And you ran a similar clip on your show, I think it was last night, from dating back to the mid-90s.
Yes.
We're going to show it in part here. Watch.
The most dangerous of these regimes is Iran, that has wed a cruel despotism to a fanatic militancy. Only the United States can lead this vital international effort to stop the nuclearization of terrorist states. But the deadline for attaining this goal is getting extremely close. The two nations that are vying, competing with each other, who will be the first to achieve nuclear weapons, is Iraq and Iran. And Iran, by the way, is also outpacing Iraq in the development of ballistic missile systems.
They're very close. They're 6 months away from being about 90% of having the enriched uranium for an atom bomb. They're rushing forward with their enrichment program.
By next spring, at most, by next summer,
2012 with the bomb.
At current enrichment rates, they will have finished the medium enrichment and move on to the final stage. From there, it's only a few months, possibly a few weeks, before they get enough enriched uranium for the first bomb.
You don't want this Iran to have neither nuclear weapons or the capability to make nuclear weapons, to enrich uranium for a nuclear bomb in short order, in a few weeks or a few months. They could do that unless that's changed.
With this massive capacity, Iran could make the fuel for an entire nuclear arsenal, and this in a matter of weeks, once it makes that decision.
2015. By the way, that was our montage. I know you didn't do it, but Debbie Murphy's correcting me that we put that one together ourselves. But he's been saying the same thing for years, Tucker, trying to bait us into this. And now, you know, thanks to Pompeo and Levin and guys like that, they have a president who's at least considering it. I just feel like Trump, he hates war. Why would he do this?
BB also got more hair every year over 30 years, which is amazing. Kind of like defying nature.
In Turkey.
Turkey. I'm sorry, that was so catty. I'm sorry I said that. But it's true. But no, it's not. And again, like BB has contempt for the United States and for American leaders. He expresses it all the time. No wonder, because they do his bidding and they swallow his obvious lies, and you can't help but have contempt for people you can manipulate. And they very much have contempt for us, like, and they show it. Ask anyone, any American diplomat other than Huckabee who deals with the Israelis, and they just exude contempt. And it's deserved. They should have contempt for us because our leaders swallow this stuff and do their bidding unthinkingly and betray the American people in the process. So again, it's not a matter of being mad at Israel, much less anti-Semitic. It's a matter of feeling betrayed by our own leaders. In the case of our current president, he doesn't want to do this. He may not have a choice, actually, because Israel has said, if you don't join us, we're going to do it anyway, move unilaterally, possibly with nuclear weapons, which they have, and they've threatened that before. And everyone pretends that's not true. It is true. They threatened it in 1973. I believe they threatened it subsequently. If you don't backstop us, if you don't defend us, help us, send us armaments, send your aircraft carriers to the region, give us missile defense, we'll have no choice but to use nukes against our enemies. And nobody wants that because it could set off a third world war, a nuclear third world war. So that is their trump card. They've played it before. I believe they are at least implying it now. They are playing it, in effect, now. And so it leaves the administration with, like, how many choices? If they say they're going to do it, then the best you can do, I guess, is to try to constrain them by shaping what they're doing. Okay, we'll participate, but we're going to set some of the boundaries here. I mean, I do think that's the thinking. That is my impression. No one's told me that explicitly, but it's pretty obvious. But I would just say there is another option that no one in Washington ever seems to consider, which is constraining our client state and saying, look, for our sake, and by the way, also for yours, no. If you allow people who are dependent on you to treat you like this, it doesn't end well. If you allow your children to scream the F word in your face at dinner, it's bad for you, but it's also bad for them because they're out of control. You are not You are not living up to your role as a parent, as a guardian, as the person in charge, as the guy paying for all this, as the country of 350 million would naturally relate to a country of 9 million. It's our fault. We've let Israel get completely out of control. They're fighting a seven-front war right now. Who fights a seven-front war? Like, if you're fighting a war...
No, I heard you discussing it. With,
right, but it's, like, obviously insane. A seven-front war?
We don't want in on that.
That?
No, we do not also, want like, in on any seven-front war.
You're not managing your life correctly.
But I
want to
play the soundbite, because you talked to Mike Huckabee about that desire within Israel, amongst its leaders anyway, for hegemony, for growing power within the Middle East. And he made an admission. Of course, he's our ambassador to Israel. He made an admission that caused an international scandal. All these Middle Eastern countries responded very angry at what he said. Here's the clip.
God gave that land to his people, the Jews, or he didn't. You're saying he did. What does that mean? Does Israel have the right to that land? Because you're appealing to Genesis.
Yeah.
You're saying that's...
Okay, folks, no need to rehash all of that. You already heard it. A couple of interesting things that you heard between Megyn Kelly and Mr. Carlson. First of all, folks, as I said before, Tucker Carlson has made all of these statements after meeting personally with the President of the United States for the third time in less than a month. He made it very clear, folks, that the President doesn't have a choice. Those were his words. He said that this thing could easily escalate into nuclear World War III. Now, folks, Tucker Carlson is not coming up with this all on his own. These are talking points, if you want to call them that, that he is getting from the President of the United States. Yes, Tucker Carlson says nobody told me that, emphatically, but this is what I believe to be true. No, folks, the President has told him this emphatically. Okay, he is telling Tucker Carlson, look, this is what I need for you to tell the American people that I cannot tell them myself. Okay? This issue of nuclear war, folks, is at the center of all of this. And people are not getting it. I can't speak authoritatively on it, folks, because I don't listen to anybody else, but judging from some of the headlines that I see within the alternative media, where everybody is screaming at the President over what has happened, and they're not factoring into this what Tucker Carlson just said, which is that the President, the only choice that he has is to see the entire region go up in a giant mushroom cloud. This conversation is not taking place as it should be. You know, Megyn Kelly mentioned the bomb cartoon in 2012 when Netanyahu was at the UN General Assembly. And if you'll think back to that, folks, everybody was laughing at that, at Netanyahu's bomb cartoon, okay? Nobody understood what message was actually being communicated here. Okay? That wasn't an Iranian bomb that Netanyahu was holding up with that drawing. It was an Israeli bomb. He was threatening the leaders of the world with nuclear incineration if they didn't get with the program of destroying Iran. And nobody got it at the time, folks, except for one guy. I'll leave it up to you to fill in the blanks as to who that one guy was. This is very troubling, folks. This is very troubling. Even to this day, two people as obviously intelligent as Tucker Carlson and Megyn Kelly are, they should recognize now, after everything that has taken place and everything that's taking place now, what that bomb cartoon actually was. It was a threat, folks. It was a threat to the entire world, especially the West, that if they didn't get with the program of destroying Iran in the fashion that the Jews are demanding, that bomb is going to go off in their countries. One more soundbite here I want to play, folks, very quickly, and you'll recognize it when you hear it.
Netanyahu had from 1995 onward the theory that the only way we're going to get rid of Hamas and Hezbollah is by toppling the governments that support them. That's Iraq, Syria, and Iran. And the guy's nothing if not obsessive. And he's still trying to get us to fight Iran this day, this week. He's a deep, dark son of a bitch, sorry to tell you, because he's gotten us into endless wars, and because of the power of all of this in the U.S. politics, he's gotten his way.
Okay, folks, so that was the esteemed Dr. Jeffrey Sachs speaking at the, let's see, it was a, what is the big, Oxford, the Oxford Student Union in the U.K. Now, what's so important about that quote, folks, is that the president-elect, Donald Trump, before he took his oath of office, he posted that video on his Truth Social account, okay? The Jews, of course, just went nuts over this. And, you know, a lot of people, especially in the alternative media, they were really taken back, and they said, whoa, what is this? Why would the president-elect Trump, who supposedly is buddy-buddy with Netanyahu and is a slave to Miriam Adelson and all the rest of that, why would he do something as provocative as this? Well, folks, a little bit of explanation here. The president was trying to talk to all of us. He wasn't talking about what Netanyahu has done in the past. What he was saying to anybody who, you know, can read between the lines is Netanyahu is going to do this again. Don't abandon me. You're going to see things that you're not going to like. I may be forced to engage in military activities that's going to make it appear as though I want to start World War III and Armageddon, but I don't. Okay, I've got this wild animal in a suit here who is threatening to blow up the world, and I don't have all of the options that you think that I, as President of the United States, actually have. That was the reason for him posting that revealing statement on the part of Professor Sachs. It wasn't about what has happened in the past. It's about what is going to be happening in the very near future. We are kind of all over the place today, folks. I want to, again, as I said earlier, you know, there is good news. This is good news that we're having this conversation. Yes, the fire department is showing up late. They're showing up at this inferno when the house is just about burned down. But that's okay. Okay? I mean, it's obviously not the way we would like it to be. But the conversation is at least starting to take place. I've had quite a few people contact me and say, have you heard what Tucker Carlson is saying these days? He's saying he sounds like you. I wonder if he's reading your website. Well, I don't know about that, folks. I think it's entirely possible. Mr. Carlson did say in his most recent program, he did use the word ugly truth in talking about Israel and the dangers that we're all in. So who knows? Maybe, possibly, I won't put a number on it. It's possible that someone has passed some of our material along to him, and it's having a positive effect. And in the unlikely event that you are listening to this program, Mr. Carlson, please keep it up. We need more of it. Right now, what we need more than anything else is a miracle, and that miracle is not going to come. Again, folks, I'm going to appeal to what Jesus did when he was speaking to the crowds of people, and the apostles were going to send them on their way after they'd been there listening to him for 3 days. And he said, they're hungry. They need to eat. They're going to pass out from exhaustion if we send them without any food. And a boy brought a few loaves of bread and some fishes, okay? And there were 5,000 people there. And Jesus, because of this meager offering on the part of this boy, a few loaves of bread and some fishes, multiplied all of that to feed everyone to the point where they gathered up all of the food that was left over and it filled 12 baskets. That's what we're hoping for, folks, is a miracle along those lines where we do these things and say these things that at this late stage in the game appear to be pointless, given as late as the hour is, but there's always that USS Liberty miracle, folks, that we have to hope for. And I would say that the work that Tucker Carlson is doing lately, I think that it's part of that miracle. Anyway, that's it for today, folks. I realize we bounced around the globe quite a bit. Just chalk it up to my advancing years, as they say, not as focused as I was before. I have a million thoughts that I want to cover, and I try to get them all in at one time. And it's, well, all you have to do is read any of the things that I write, folks, as I have now added a new title. I'm not just the king of metaphors, I'm the king of the run-on sentences that just go on and on and on and on. Nope. There's a comma once in a while, but that's what happens when you're trying to squash too many big thoughts into a small space. Anyway, that's it for today, folks, on this Wednesday, March the 4th, 2026 edition of the Ugly Truth broadcast. It's okay to be afraid, folks. This is just part of our nature as human beings, and there's a lot to be afraid of. But we aren't dead yet, so in the meantime, let's just keep our fingers crossed and pray for a miracle, because as we say often, we really do need it.